May I be excused, sir?
She asked, not looking at either of us.
Dismissed.
Thompson left, and I was alone with the Tribune again. At least this morning she didn't have that crazed look in her eye. I think tossing around ranks had made her feel better.
I've been thinking about what you said, McGill,
she told me. Huh?
About Thompson, that she might have had actual feelings for you. Normally, I dismiss such nonsense as masculine bravado on your part, but that display just now. She cared about your fate. I could see that.
Maybe she just doesn't like to see someone done wrong. It happened to her years back.
Yes, and on that occasion it was in no small part due to your actions.
My mind cast back to those days. On Steel World, when I was a fresh recruit and new to the Legions, Centurion Thompson and I hadn't gotten along well. She had, in fact, tried to kill me, but ended up dead herself. As a result of this and her allegiance to Turov through some very bad decisions years later, Thompson had been demoted.
Tell me,
Galena said, walking around her desk and standing alarmingly near.
Are you still interested in me, physically?
Sure. I guess so.
Good. I'd like to have you service me now.
What, sir?
You heard me.
I stared at her. She had jutting young breasts, a lovely swell to her hips, and an ass to die for. Truly, I said, this isn't a fair thing to do to a man standing over him like this and offering up.
Are you interested or not?
She snapped, putting her hands on her hips. I sighed. I thought I knew why she was turned on. She liked feeling like she was back in charge. She liked the idea of me being dominated by her, punished. Now, I'll be the first to admit that if I had an ounce of self-respect, I'd have gently scooted her fine posterior out of my face and beat a hasty retreat. Unfortunately, I'm a man of simple tastes. One of them involved beautiful women. Accordingly, I put my hands on her, and I gave it my all. She hissed, and she squirmed, but she didn't tell me to stop. She liked everything I could give. We didn't quite get to finish, however. Suddenly, the door popped open. Galena's face was down on her desk, and most of her uniform was off. When she looked over her shoulder at the open door, she pulled away from me, instantly raging. One moment she'd been purring with pleasure, the next she was hissing like an alley cat.
"What is this?" she shouted.
Two hogs crowded into the doorway. Hegemony men. Military police, according to their uniforms. Stern-faced veterans, they were heavy-set guys who looked like they'd played a lot of football back in the day. "You're under arrest," began the lead hog, but that was as far as he got. Now, in order to understand what happened next, certain facts have to be made clear. I'm not your ordinary man when I'm rudely surprised. In fact, I have to confess a propensity to extreme violence in unexpected situations. Accordingly, the lead hog, making his arrest speech, caught my fist under his chin. His eyes bulged in shock. I'd popped his larynx. He staggered, grabbing his throat, and made wheezing sounds. The second man went for his pistol, but I grabbed his wrist and jammed the gun back down into the holster at his hip. The gun went off, and it burned a neat hole in his brown leather boots. A gray wisp of steam and smoke told me the beam had gone right through to the floor, searing a hole the width of a pencil straight through his foot. Roaring, he punched me with the other hand. That was a good play. For a hog, they normally went down without much of a fight when you surprised one of them. My face was bleeding, and the two of us were struggling in a clinch. The first hog was on his knees now, then he rolled over on his back. His face was turning blue.
"McGill!"
a familiar voice shouted.
"McGill! Damn you, man!"
It was Winslade's voice. His eyes slid for a fraction of a second over the shoulder of the hog who was giving me a good fight. There, in the outer office, stood Galena's office boy toy and Winslade. The secretary looked horrified, and he was calling for backup. It was Winslade who caught my attention, however. I was in a blood rage, but sometimes I can still be reached, even in such a primal state. Fortunately for everyone, I managed to hear Winslade and to comprehend what he was saying.
"They're not here to arrest you, you mad ape. They're here to arrest Turov."
I froze. The hog I was wrestling with backed off, putting his hand to his chest and gasping for air. I hoped he didn't have a heart attack. He didn't deserve that. The other guy, well, his tongue was protruding and blue. He was pretty much dead and gone. Chapter 4. I found myself standing half-nude in Turov's office with a crowd staring at me in shock. Now that my initial anger at having been attacked in the middle of, shall we say, an indiscretion with Galena was gone, I wasn't sure what to do.
"You might want to cover yourself," Winslade suggested to me in a sneering tone.
"Oh, yeah." I reached down and pulled up my pants. Behind me, Galena was already dressed. Smart clothes were wonderful at moments like this. Straps were knitting themselves into place and cinching up tight all over her body. She pushed past me and the hog I'd been wrestling with, who was trying to revive his partner. I could have told him that was hopeless, but I didn't like delivering bad news. Turov strode into her outer office. Her hands were on her hips.
"What is this intrusion, Centurion Winslade?" "I'm sorry, Tribune," he said primly. "My hand was forced. I can't condone this kind of harassment." "What the fuck are you talking about, you rodent?" "Here's the evidence, sir. I did my duty and reported it. Nothing else."
On his tapper, a vid was playing. It was only a few minutes old. First, we watched Galena demote me. Moments later, I was approached and practically commanded to have sex with her.
"I'm afraid this sort of sexual aggression is frowned upon these days," Winslade said, clucking his tongue.
Turov's hands formed into claws. Her nails were blood red, and I could tell you from personal experience they were pretty sharp. She swung her head around wildly, looking at high corners.
"You put a buzzer in here? You spied on your superior officer?" "I merely tapped into the security grid. These officers are recorded periodically. You know that, don't you, sir?"
Her eyes swung to meet his, and there was a mutual moment of hatred exchanged.
"I had those things turned off months ago."
Winslade shrugged.
"Perhaps there was some kind of error in the processing of that request. I'll reprimand the technical department for the oversight."
The second banana hog had finished reporting his partner's state, and he'd regained some of his composure. More hog MPs had arrived in the meantime, trotting through the door and surrounding me. They pointed guns in my direction, so I surrendered and let them handcuff me. "You're both under arrest," the second banana hog told Galena and I. "Come with me, please." "Sorry about your buddy," I told him. "You surprised me, that's all. It's a Varus thing." The hog set his jaw in anger for a second, but then he nodded. "We should have identified ourselves before busting in. But Centurion Winslade here insisted..." Winslade cleared his throat loudly.
"Veteran, don't you think you ought to explain all that to a military court, not to the defendants? Hmm?"
"Right. Okay, let's move out." We were marched out of Galena's office like a pair of felons, which I suppose we were, technically speaking. The Tribune was spitting mad, but she was quiet. That was a bad sign. If she'd been throwing a fit, I would have felt better. She was at her most dangerous when she was quietly plotting. Glancing back, I saw her working her tapper. Her hands were cuffed, but she was doing it anyway behind her back. That was a nice trick. She was a pro. Before we made it into the elevator to go down to the brig, the lead hog stopped the march and gazed down at his tapper, frowning. "What's wrong, sir?" asked one of his minions. "We've got new orders. We're supposed to go back and arrest Centurion Winslade, too." They looked at one another in confusion. Then the lead hog and adjunct with a beer gut turned suspicious eyes on his prisoners.
"How did you two pull that off?"
he asked. I shrugged and looked as dumb as hog's fat. That worked, and his eyes slid right off me.
"Tribune," he asked Galena, "is this some kind of trick? You're not getting out of my custody."
"That thought would never occur to me, adjunct. Who sent these new orders to you?"
"Imperator Deitch, looks like."
"Well then, it's up to you to decide whether they're legitimate or not. Perhaps you'll be joining us in the brig within the hour."
The hogs didn't like that idea. They were rule followers through and through, not like Legion Varus people. Sort of the opposite, really. It occurred to me as I watched Galena's magic work on their minds that she really did belong with us in Varus. She was just too much of a loose cannon to be hegemony brass. No wonder they'd voted to kick her out.
"All right," the adjunct said at last. "Squad about face. We're not splitting up. We've got 6 men. We can arrest 1 more crazy Varus Legionnaire today."
When we arrived back at Galena's office, we found Winslade with his boots up on her desk, swiping at her private tablets. He jumped to his feet in alarm.
"Centurion," the lead hog said, "you're coming with us."
"You can't be serious," he said. "Did our tribune talk you into this? You do know that by regulation she can't order you around while she's under official—"
"No, sir," the adjunct said. "The orders came from Imperator Deitch."
This confounded Winslade. After another 30 seconds of squawking, they had him in cuffs. All 3 of us were marched to the brig and placed in separate cells. The door to my cell opened about an hour later, and I snorted awake.
"Miguel?"
I climbed to my feet and saluted. My visitor was none other than Imperator Deitch.
"Good morning, sir."
"Sleeping? It's 10 a.m.
"Well, I haven't quite adjusted to military mornings yet. Besides, this brig is like a second home to me."
"I see.
Am I in trouble, sir?"
"Always," she said. "But before we get to your violent outburst, let's discuss the first string of crimes that preceded it on this fine morning."
"I'm not following you, sir." She looked down at her tapper and shook her head in bemusement.
"Let me see if I can summarize. As I understand it, your rank was removed at approximately 7 a.m. Shortly after that, you were pressured for intimate contact by your superior officer."
Sort of, but it wasn't quite the way it sounds."
"How do you mean?"
I squirmed a little. "Is there any way I could talk to Drusus about this?"
"No. He's gone back to Geneva."
"So, that makes you the head hog around here, doesn't it?" Her eyes were glittering and black for a moment. I figured she didn't like being called a hog, but that wasn't unusual. Most of them hated it.
"Right," I said in the face of her silence. "Well, sir, Galena, Tribune Turov, did demote me, but she didn't threaten me or offer to restore my rank in return for any kind of favor."
Deitch frowned fractionally, then tilted her head.
"Then why did she do it?"
"Well, sometimes a young lady gets certain impure ideas, you see, sir. Can happen to anyone."
"No, fool. I mean, why did she demote you?"
I shrugged.
"She didn't pressure you? She didn't threaten you? She didn't demand anything you didn't want to give?"
"She might have," I admitted. I don't really recall. She says things all the time, but unless we're deployed in the field, I rarely listen to them.
Deitch nodded again and pursed her lips tightly.
Do you have anger issues with women, McGill?
I looked startled.
No, sir, I like women just fine. Ask anyone.
Deitch heaved a sigh, and she stood up rapidly.
Fine, just fine, I get it. You aren't going to help me. Either Turov's threats are so frightening you can't move against her, or she's managed to buy you off somehow. Keep in mind, adjunct, that a patron outside your cliquish legion could be a nice thing to have. You're throwing that opportunity away.
It was my turn to look confused. She seemed to be suggesting I should help rat out Turov to further my own career. She might be right, of course. Galena had lots of enemies and only a few well-placed friends. Signing on with Deitch's faction might just be the wisest course. But I'd rarely taken the smart man's path in life.
Deitch began to walk out, but I called her back. Imperator, what about Winslade? What was he arrested for?
Apparently he hacked into the interoffice security system.
Oh, I said, figuring that was probably true. Am I free to go?
She nodded.
Yes, I'm releasing all of you. Not as an act of mercy, mind you, but a practicality. Your legion is due to deploy within weeks. There's no time for the prison sentences you all richly deserve. But McGill?
Yes, sir.
Try not to kill anyone else until you reach your new target world, all right?
Sure thing, sir. I'll do my best.
Sighing, she left. A pair of disgruntled hogs released me, glaring as they did so. I figured they were sore about me offing one of their buddies. I understood that, so I didn't tease them or anything. Soon, Winslade and I were standing outside the brig, eyeing one another with suspicion.
You didn't turn on her, did you?
Winslade asked. I told the truth, that's all. Winslade winced.
Now, after all these years, whatever possessed you to turn into a Boy Scout at this late date?
You set this up, didn't you? It's your fault that hog died, and we're all in the shit with the brass, all because you couldn't stand a demotion. Winslade looked up at me with hooded eyes.
We could have gotten our ranks back if you just played along.
Listen. Before you include me in any of your future schemes, you'd better check with me first.
Fine,
he said, spitting the word. His tapper beeped and he looked at it. New orders had just come in. Mine beeped a moment later. We both looked at them, and then at each other in dismay.
Both of us?
Winslade asked.
Working the booth together?
I laughed. It'll be just like the old days. We're gonna have a good time. Winslade wasn't laughing. We'd been ordered to report to the mustering hall in Newark for recruitment duty. For most Legion Varus people, that assignment was a vacation. You got to sit in a chair and talk dumb kids into signing up. But for Winslade especially, this felt like a real slap in the face.
She's back in her office already, he lamented, handing down shitwork from on high. If you'd only claimed harassment.
Well, I didn't, I told him. See you tomorrow, bright and early. Listen, the good news is we've only got a few weeks of this to serve out before we're shipped off to God knows where.
Weeks,
he echoed, and I could tell his dreams of glory and vengeance were evaporating. I had to hand it to Turov. She was the slipperiest of the slippery. That woman made snakes seem rough to the touch. She'd gotten herself out of the brig pronto, probably the moment Deitch had figured out she couldn't get me to file charges. Still smiling and giving my head little shakes of amusement, I headed for the ground floor. It was midday, and I was already late for any bar and grill I could find. Chapter 5 After a hearty lunch, I went back to my rented hotel room. I really was sleepy, and my grand plan for the afternoon included a lengthy nap. I was just stretching out on the couch when I felt something pressing into my back. Grunting and probing, I found the brown paper package Evelyn had given me the night before. I'd forgotten all about it. Opening the package carefully just in case it was a bomb with a trigger wire, I stared in bafflement for a moment. It was a book, an old book, made out of paper. To me, that was like holding a scroll from ancient Egypt in my hands. I read the cover out loud. The Eaters of Lotus. Suddenly, I was struck by a memory. Claver had been seeking this book years ago. We'd found it at more or less the same time in the library in Central. Before that, a cephalopod commando in a teleport suit had sought the same book. After Central had been badly damaged in the war, everyone had assumed the book was gone forever. Frankly, after all these long years, I'd forgotten about it. But here it was, in my hands again. With a jolt, I recalled what Evelyn had said. Don't open it with any cameras around, not even your tapper. Clumsily, I covered the title back up again with the ripped-up paper. Then I found a bag, and I stuck it deep inside. Who could I take this to? There were only a few trustworthy people I knew of who might be smart enough to explain its significance. Taking the bag, I headed out into the streets and began a long walk south. For about 2 kilometers around Central, which was a big area because the building by itself was more than a kilometer wide at the base, the city was pretty safe and orderly. Hogs patrolled the streets, and people with money and jobs hustled this way and that in every direction. But further out, where the residential areas began, things changed. Oh, if you stuck to the nicest neighborhoods with auto gun turrets and face recognition systems on the gates, you didn't have a problem. But if you strayed all the way out into the tenement housing districts, it could get a little rough. The worst neighborhood of all was the Old City. In this region, the buildings were made of worn-out bricks, and the streets were narrow and dark. The area wasn't without charm, as there were some good bars down there, but mostly there were lots of aliens and a few very friendly women. People called it the Gray Zone. I'm not sure why. Probably because it was where the rules were blurred. Some of the aliens who lived here from off-world had their own ideas about cultural conduct. One being's tradition was another's crime, as they say. But not down here. The laws were lax, and most of the aliens liked it that way. Not all of them were happy residents, however. Some lived here just because they couldn't get housing permits anywhere else. It was unfair, but that's how it was. Today, I wanted to talk to someone special who lived down here. Smuggling the book in my bag like it was a million credits worth of contraband, I walked up a half dozen flights of stairs before I arrived at a painted door made of actual wood fiber. When I tapped on her apartment door the first time, Florimel didn't answer. I decided to wait in the hallway, suspecting she might still be at work. Sure enough, after a few hours, she showed up.
Miguel?
Florimel asked in surprise.
That's me.
She froze in the hallway, and she looked a little scared. That made me feel bad. Our past was checkered at best. We'd seen a lot of events together, some good, some bad. Florimel was a near human. She was tall, with a long, slim neck and a runway model's body. Her face was distinctive, exotic. It was her brain she was best known for, however. She'd run the alien research labs on Rogue World back in the day, before the Magua fleet had bombed it out of existence.
Am I under arrest again?
She asked, finally. No, no, nothing like that. I'm just here to visit.
Oh, I see,
she said, touching her tapper to her door and watching it slide open.
I'm sorry, James. I'm not sexually active at this time.
Can I come in anyway? I asked. I ship out soon. She thought about it for a moment.
All right.
She stepped inside and I moved to follow her. But I didn't make it. A thick, scaly arm shot across the doorway in front of me. It was attached to a saurian, one of those raptor types. Now you have to understand that I've fought to the death with this kind of alien on many occasions. My first death, in point of fact, involved a swarm of these guys tearing my guts out with their wide snouts full of teeth that looked like yellowy nails. As a result, my hands came up and grabbed the arm. I figured this lizard was trying to perform a home invasion. Then the dino went for me with his other clawed fist, and it was on.
Stop! Florimel shouted. Both of you! What are you doing? There's no cause for violence.
We both froze and looked at her. The translator around the dino's neck flickered as he grunted and hissed.
This being is an invader, the saurian said. I've watched him for hours, standing in this hallway. He stalks you. You are his prey.
No, he's not exactly a predator, Rash. And James, please, don't break his arm or anything.
Sorry, I said, letting go. Is this your friend? You should teach him some manners.
The density of my bones is too great for human strength,
the alien bragged.
Breaking any of them would prove impossible.
You want me to prove you wrong? I demanded.
Gentlemen,
Florimel interrupted again.
You've got to stop. Come inside, both of you.
We both eyed each other, and then we tried to walk into her apartment at the same time. The doorway was nowhere near wide enough for the two of us, and we almost got into it again.
James, you first.
Florimel directed.
Why this one? Why not me first?
The lizard demanded.
He's my guest, Rash. You're just a neighbor.
I'm your guardian. I'm indebted for the gift of this device.
Rash touched the translator, and I began catching on. Apparently Florimel had given a compact translator. It was only about the size of 100 credit piece. They were usually much larger and harder to use. She probably helped develop these things at Central, where she worked in the labs. How had she brought it home? It was hard to say. Her people were geniuses, but they didn't totally get the idea of secret projects or government property. I sat warily on her only couch. The lizard hulked in the doorway, malingering.
This male is aggressive, he complained. He'll abuse you.
Rash,
Florimel said.
He's not that bad. I've known him for years. This is James McGill. He's an officer in the Legions.
Rash looked at me with sudden intensity.
A legionnaire? A paid killer? How can you trust such an individual? If he had a tail, I'd cut it off.
Your tail is looking kind of limp to me, Dino, I said. Maybe I should take it off your hands. Rash took 2 steps into the apartment, and he loomed over us. His kind were big, as tall as I was, and heavier built. They generally weren't as fast as humans, but their musculature was denser.
What legion do you serve?
He demanded, looking down at me. Before I could answer, Florimel shut him down.
Rash, you're being rude. By human rules of conduct, you haven't been invited into my home. You must retreat.
Rash stood there, his tail floating behind him. It was as thick and as rough as an alligator's, but it moved more like a cat's tail. I could tell he was using it to balance on 2 feet, which his kind often did. After a pause, Rash's translator flashed again.
I will withdraw, If you are found dead in the morning, I will mourn.
See you then, Rash,
Florimel said. The lizard retreated with poor grace. Florimel had to get up and close the door herself as he left it hanging open.
You've got a dino for a boyfriend? I asked.
Hardly,
she laughed.
He's more like a house pet. He thinks he's caring for me.
That's odd.
He's the only Saurian in this building. He hasn't adjusted well. By showing kindness, I suppose I've gotten him to imprint on me.
Strange, I said. The Saurians of Steel World living among us here in Central City. Imagine that. I didn't know there were any of them on the planet except for a few stuffed heads mounted on walls, that is. Florimel wrinkled her nose at me in disgust.
Don't talk like that.
I shut up, but I could have told her I wasn't joking. I knew a few officers who had such trophies on their walls.
Okay,
she said.
You can tell me now.
Tell you what?
Why you've come here tonight. The real reason, if you're not still hoping for a sexual encounter.
She was right, of course, about my secondary motives. What man didn't hope for the favors of a lovely lady in the evening? But that wasn't the whole story. I dug out the torn-up brown paper package I'd brought with me. I made sure there were no cameras watching, even covering my tapper with my sleeve, before I showed her the book. At first, she wasn't impressed.
This is an antique,
she said.
How do you adjust the font?
You don't, I admitted.
How disappointing. The Eaters of Lotus. What's to be gained by reading this?
I'm not sure, I admitted. Then I provided her with a long list of people who'd sought this book with deadly intensity.
The cephalopods wanted it? So badly they sent a commando to Central?
Yes, I said. It might even have kicked off the invasion of Earth. Their first move was to attempt to capture this artifact. That was all years ago, and I thought it was lost. But it's been found.
By who?
I shrugged, and she frowned at me.
You're not going to answer? All right. You've intrigued me. Was that your intent?
Not really, I said. I just want to know what this is about, why people would want a copy so badly.
She began to examine the book closely.
It's not a copy,
she pronounced.
You see here, these markings indicate it's a first edition. I've only read of such things on your grid. I've never seen one. But this is definitely one of the original printings. How old did you say it was?
It was written and published about 200 years ago.
Interesting. Very well. I will read it. Be quiet, please.
Have you got anything to eat?
Florimel pointed vaguely toward the kitchen. I raided her small supply of edibles, and the results were even worse than usual. Thin women rarely had good food around the house. Chewing carrots and slurping yogurts, I made the best of it. There was no alcohol of any kind that I could detect. After a while, I got bored and started watching vids on my tapper. I was laughing at an old cereal when she walked up to me with a strange look on her face. She touched my shoulder. "I'm sorry," I said, sitting up. "Was I being too loud?"
You're lying on my bed.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of furniture.
I told you, I'm not—
Look, maybe I should go, I said. I'll come back later when you finish the book.
I have read it,
she said, tossing the paper back onto my lap.
And I've made notes, trying to detect a code or pattern. I found nothing.
What's it about? I asked.
It's about a tidally locked planet, where one side is warm but sunless, a dark place, full of intelligent plants. There are many beings, some deadly. The tidal creatures are highly intelligent, but have virtually no survival instincts. They allow others to consume them without concern.
That's weird. Those plant creatures sound kind of like the Whirr.
Indeed.
She went on to explain several elements of the story, all of which seemed vaguely familiar. I'd tried to read the book when I'd first discovered it, but it had put me to sleep. Most books did that. Florimel touched my tapper with her fingers, looking to see what I was watching. "You like old shows?" I asked her. "Some of them are still funny 100 years later."
"No,"
she said.
"I'm marveling at the smoothness of your skin. The warriors from Blood World are always scarred if they last through early adulthood."
"That's one of the miracles of revival machines, a new bod to go with an old mind."
Florimel's fingers lingered on my arm. That wasn't a good thing for a woman to do to a man like me. It gave me ideas. I said.
"Do you have a place to stay in the city?"
she asked. "A hotel room?"
"Would you rather stay here?"
There it was. She was propositioning me. It honestly came as a surprise, but not entirely. Florimel and I had been serious lovers long ago. I suspected that by ignoring her and making no moves at all, then getting her to read a boring book, well, she'd changed her mind about me. I thought about playing hard to get for a few more minutes, but I couldn't do it. I pulled her down onto the bed, and she offered little resistance. Hours later, I woke up. It was dark and quiet in the apartment. At first, I thought maybe I'd been snoring and awakened that way, but no. There was something else. About then, I noticed a hulking figure in the bedroom with us. Rolling off the bed with a grunt, I saw the figure stoop once, striking at the bed. Could he have... "No!" I shouted. Florimel moaned in pain and went limp on the bed. I tackled the big alien because it was Rosh. I recognized him by his bulk, his swampy odor, and the way his silhouette moved. It wasn't the way a man would move. His shoulders and hips kind of rolled when he walked. All Saurians moved like that. Saurians are hard to deal with in hand-to-hand. They have scales, heavy muscles, and bone, not much in the way of pain receptors, and lots of teeth. Still, there are sensitive spots, and I'd been trained to find them. I rammed a finger into each of his crusty nostrils and did a little ripping in there. The sensation was disgusting, but a gout of blood poured out a moment later. Roaring, Rosh backhanded me, and I went ass over tea kettle into the wall. I bounced back up, and he walked close, shaking his head and snorting. Blood flew everywhere. I flicked on the overhead lights. Rosh stood in all his glory, bloody and full of glinting-eyed fury. If anything, he looked more dangerous with the lights on. I could tell by his stance he'd had some training in physical combat. Punching him wasn't going to do the trick. The only way to kill a Saurian without a gun was to get him to bleed out. Hammering on him with my fists would probably break more knuckles than it did scales. Accordingly, I grabbed a ceramic lamp with a bottle-thick base and smashed it on the dresser. Jagged blades of glass and a few wires stuck up from my fist, forming a makeshift weapon. Rosh charged me again, as I knew he would, and I sidestepped. His thick arms closed on nothing. I jabbed him in the back as he went by. Before he could turn around, I ran the glass down the inside of one thigh where the scales were thin. Like humans, Saurians were evolving past scales, just as we were evolving past fur. More blood ran. Rosh stood up again and wheeled to face me.
"You will not grapple with me,"
he demanded, his translator flashing in the dim room.
"You dishonor yourself."
"It's you who dishonored yourself," I shouted back. "You struck a sleeping woman, your friend, the one who made you that translator. Why'd you do that?"
"I plotted your death from the moment I saw you. But her, She forfeited her life when I caught your scent upon her. So this is an honor killing? You're not even human. She is female. I would do the same on my home world.
Part of the reason I was trying to get him to talk was to weaken him. Blood was running out of his snout as he spoke and pouring down his leg, making a puddle. Saurians had a weakness in their nasal cavities. The vessels there didn't seal themselves easily, and if the bleeding didn't stop... Rosh didn't charge me again immediately, so I checked on Florimel. I was surprised and dismayed to see Rosh had killed her.
You murdered her, I said, shocked. Does that upset you?
Of course it does.
Good, because you have upset me. You have changed my direction in life. Tell me why you really came here tonight, not just for the mating, I'm sure.
I looked up at him, my eyes narrowed. Rosh might not be what he seemed. Perhaps he was more than an alien who'd gotten lost on Earth and caught a case of puppy love for Florimel.
You're a spy, I said with sudden certainty. You've been spying on Florimel because she works at Central.
Rosh snorted, and a fresh squirt of blood hit the floor with an audible slap.
I am from Cancri 9, he said. No member of my race would ever seek to live among humans permanently. I was exiled until I performed a great service for my prince. She...
Here he pointed at Florimel's sprawling body.
She was to be my route back home.
But you killed her, you fool!
She is no longer useful. I have researched you and learned you are the McGill. I have been told you are important. Now, you will tell me why you are here, McGill.
I'm not a person who can control my emotions at moments like this. Sure, I could have tried to make peace. I could have asked him all about his aunties and uncles back on Steel World, but I didn't feel like it. I'll show you why I'm here, I said, and I took a step forward. I took the book off the bed and held it up to him. The cephalopods invaded Earth just to get this book.
The book, he said.
He squinted at it, and he reached out to take it. That's when I struck. He was leaning toward me, and he wasn't expecting a sucker punch. What really helped out were his slow reflexes. They just weren't as good as a human's. My broken lamp rammed into his snout. The jagged glass split open his thumb-sized nostrils and cut him up good. For a second, he recoiled in pain, but then he lunged at me, roaring again. This time he caught me. I didn't have much room to run. The apartment was a small one. Arms as thick as a strong man's legs wrapped around my chest and squeezed. I felt ribs crackle, and the air wheezed out of my lungs. Rosh's hot, bubbling breath and blood ran all down my neck and back. His teeth sought my neck as well. Right about then, I realized I was going to die. Then, everything went black. Chapter 6 Coming back to life was never pleasant. I suspected that when baby James had been born the first time, I hadn't enjoyed the process then, either.
"What's the score?" asked a harsh-sounding woman.
"A solid 9."
"Good. Get him into recovery."
People prodded at me, and I let them get it out of their system for a while.
"What about Florimel?"
I croaked when I was able.
"Who?"
the woman asked me.
"Florimel.
Scientist? One of the rogue world of researchers?"
"I don't know about aliens, adjunct. We only do military personnel here."
Eventually, I was released from Blue Deck and issued fresh clothing. A team of hogs was waiting for me at the door. I was disappointed to recognize the leader of the team. It was none other than the hog MP I'd killed in Turov's office. His name was Blaine. I hadn't bothered to look at his name tag when I'd first met him.
"Hello, veteran Blaine," I said.
"Damn, it seems like just yesterday when you were arresting—"
"That was yesterday, McGill," Blaine snapped.
"Well, damnation. You look great, you know that?
You must have lost 50 pounds. The men behind him exchanged amused glances. This fat hog had died and lost years of paunch. A good-natured fellow might have been grateful for such a fast improvement in his personal appearance. But not this guy. Blaine's face got angrier and redder with every word I spoke.
James McGill, you're under arrest again.
What for this time?
The murders of two civilians. First, Florimel,
I don't see her last name here.
That's because she doesn't have one.
Blaine glanced at me, then back down at his tapper.
And secondly, Rosh?
Did you say you've got a rash? I asked him loudly. That could be a serious problem. Don't ignore it. Maybe you caught a bad grow. You ought to go back down to the doctor's on Blue Deck and ask for a shot or something.
As I spoke, I jabbed a thumb over my shoulder toward the doors I'd just exited.
Veteran Blaine's only response was to glare at me.
But, I told him in a low tone, I'd have a care. If you can live with this rash, you might want to keep your mouth shut. They like to recycle bad grows.
The regulars behind him snickered.
Are you coming with us quietly, McGill, or do we have to put you in cuffs?
You know, I'd advise you to do that regardless. Looking confused and annoyed, they shrugged and cuffed me. I walked with them back down to the brig again. They questioned me, and I told them everything. Except about the book, of course. At the same time, I pumped them for what little information they had.
So Rosh died, did he?
Hot damn.
No regrets, no remorse.
No, sir. That lizard broke in and killed the girl I was spending the night with. Then he tried to kill me. Looks like it was a tie in that case.
The hog frowned. Are you claiming that this Rosh person instigated the attack?
Of course. Basic forensics, the home cameras, they should back that up.
Normally we could check your story that way, but there was some kind of failure in the passive security systems on that floor of the building.
All night?
All night.
Huh. So, it was a setup. Maybe Rosh was smarter than I thought. He came in with a plan, and he waited until he figured we'd be sound asleep to strike. He did say something about being an agent here on Earth, you know.
Veteran Blaine set his jaw and looked at me suspiciously. I didn't think he believed me.
That was a funny thing. Hogs like this guy tended to buy my lies, but then scoff at the truth, finding it unbelievable.
McGill, I've looked at your records. There are way too many incidences of unexplained violence circulating around you.
You're right about that, and you're just the man to fix it, too. Get on out of your office, hog. I shrank down that big ass of yours for you. Don't let it grow back. Investigate that apartment on foot. Tell me why Rosh was befriending Florimel in his own weird way. Tell me why she made him a small translator. And lastly, tell me why he killed her the night I showed up to visit an old girlfriend.
I could tell the hog had no idea what to think. He sighed and pushed back from his desk, shaking his head. I don't know what to do with you. We'll set a hearing date, and I'll forward every charge I can dream up to the prosecutors, but do you know what they'll say?
What?
That we've got one live human and two dead aliens. The live human has a story, and he was once decorated with the Dawn Star for defending Earth. On the other hand, the dead aliens aren't telling us anything.
I nodded. Sounds like a pretty good summary to me. But I'm sure Florimel will catch a revive any hour. She'll be able to corroborate my story.
Veteran Blaine shook his head. I've been checking. She's not on any revive list, according to the data core. Maybe she's not as important as you thought.
Tough break.
He didn't look like he thought it was a tough break. He hated me, at least mildly. And anything that might make me unhappy was probably turning him on. Annoyed, I got out of there as fast as I could. I didn't leave Central, however. I headed up to Turov's office instead. She wasn't all that happy to see me.
What do you want, McGill?
She growled. About yesterday.
No,
she said firmly. No what?
No, we're not going to pick up where we left off. That moment has gone, probably forever.
Oh, that? No, sir, that isn't what I was talking about. I quickly filled her in on my evening activities from yesterday. Naturally, I again left out any part concerning Evelyn Thompson and the book she'd given me. By the end of the tale, Galena was slowly shaking her head.
Unbelievable,
she said.
You're a goat of a man.
What?
I didn't satisfy you, so you ran off to find some alien chick a few hours later.
I said. I hadn't thought about the story from her point of view. Do you mean that if I'd come over to your place instead? She made a rude noise with pursed lips.
As if. I said the mood was gone, and I meant it.
Okay. Can you help me out, though?
How?
By putting a revival order for Florimel. She's an employee here at Central. She deserves another life. Turov shrugged.
Not on my budget, she doesn't. Get the science people to pay for it.
That's petty, sir, real low. She looked at me speculatively.
Are you willing to offer something in return?
Like what?
Loyalty? Information?
I sighed. Things always went this way with Galena. I'd played the spy for her on any number of occasions. I can't spy on Drusus, not now. He's gone and we're shipping out soon.
Not exactly. He hasn't left yet. He plans to have a meeting of all the Varys officers in 2 days' time. As you're an officer, you'll be attending. Still, however, you're right about one thing. Your usefulness has been substantially reduced due to the recent changes.
Come on, Galena. I killed a man for you just yesterday.
You did that out of reflex,
she said.
But still, the gesture was appreciated. I felt like killing those men myself for barging in. I still do. So, I'll consider the revival order. In the meantime, I've come up with a suitable new post for you.
There was a twinkle of amusement in her eye, and with Turov, that wasn't a good thing. What duty? Oh, I said, remembering. You mean the mustering hall job, right?
The orders came through already? Good. You're going back to your roots, McGill. You're going to serve Legion Varys as a recruiter. We've got a large number of gaps in our Legion's roster. I can't imagine why.
I knew why, of course. The news was out worldwide about Varys. When I joined up, not many people had ever heard of the outfit. But that had changed over the years. We were now famous, or rather, infamous. Many screw-ups, bloodbaths, and long, difficult assignments had been attributed to our name by the press. Over time, we'd become the butt of jokes and exciting stories on the interplanetary grid. People liked to follow our exploits, but not all that many were volunteering for an organization so often referred to in public as a meat grinder legion. I tried to talk my way out of it, but Turov remained firm. The very next day, she sent me to sit on a worn-out, steel-legged stool in the mustering hall of Newark. The job was dull and somewhat humiliating. Often, candidates came down the escalator to the booths huddling around the SkyTrain station and gawked at us. Sometimes they even approached and asked us funny things. "Hey, Varys," a snot-nosed high school grad said on the first gray afternoon. "What, kid?" I called out, trying to sound cheery. "You want to sign up?" His name was Cooper. I knew that much from the recognition system built into my booth. He hadn't cleared all the tests upstairs yet. I could see that, too. But it didn't hurt to make an early play for candidates, not if you were Legion Varus.
Sure thing, old man, Cooper said, even though by my appearance I looked no more than 5 years older than he was.
As soon as I finish the last tests, I'll put my thumb down on your tablet. But first, I need you to answer one question honestly.
Okay, shoot.
How many times have you died, sir?
I blinked. Cooper had me there. I didn't even know. 100? 200? I really wasn't sure. I'd given up counting years back.
3, I said firmly, lying with a smile and an honest John stare.
I've died exactly 3 times. That sounds bad, I know, but—
You fucking liar,
the kid said, braying with laughter and shaking his head.
No one gets into the officer ranks in Varus with only 3 deaths, more like 30 or 130.
Cooper walked off, and I had half a mind to go after him and send him through a revival machine for a first-hand experience.
Losing our touch, are we, McGill?
A snotty voice spoke up from behind me. I spun around on my stool to see Winslade. His arms were crossed and his eyes were hooded. My face split into a grin.
Ha! So you're the one pulling the evening shift. She got you to shit duty for her 2 favorite officers.
That's right. Laugh it up.
I must say, however, I'm equally surprised to find the great McGill here. Aren't you the Tribune's latest sex toy?
Well, I said, hanging my head, I didn't play that so well.
Right. From what I heard, you couldn't stay faithful to your new paramour for 24 hours.
It wasn't like we exchanged rings or anything. Winslade released a dirty chuckle.
The mere concept is amusing.
What about you? Your gambit failed to jail her. Why are you still breathing at all? Winslade shrugged.
You must think on a less visceral level. Turov has just suffered a stunning defeat. Yes, she's angry and vengeful, but she hasn't lost her mind to emotion, not completely. If I do manage to press my case against her, further demotions or other direct punishments will strengthen all my claims of harassment.
I nodded thoughtfully. Right. So she just sent us here to this salt mine instead of dropping us into a ditch because it would look bad?
Correct. This is the worst thing she could do to both of us without it being obvious. This way, she's leaning on us without seeming to.
The more I thought about it, the more I realized he was right. I was hating it down here, and so was Winslade. The woman was diabolical. A dull hour passed. My mind cast back to that distant day when I'd first come to the mustering hall to find a home among the legions. At that point, Veteran Harris had been sitting in the very same booth I was haunting now. Had he been placed there as a punishment, too? It seemed possible, maybe even likely. I made a mental note to ask him about it some day when he was in a good mood. Another hour passed, and we actually managed to sign a few people. They were universally desperate and clueless. I almost felt bad knowing firsthand what they were in for during our no-mercy training sessions. At about 4 p.m., when I was just starting to daydream again, a familiar face appeared at the top of the elevator. It was Centurion Evelyn Thompson. She approached the booth and looked at me furtively. We'd shared a lot of moments. Most recently, she'd given me the book I had in my pack right now. But before that, we'd been lovers, murderers, and I still like to think, friends.
James,
she said, stepping up to the counter and eyeing me with uncharacteristic shyness.
When do you get off?
My shift ends at 5:30, I said. Winslade's going late tonight.
Would you like to have dinner with me?
Oh, my God,
Winslade said in disgust, sitting at my side with his arms crossed. We glanced at him, then ignored him. He figured this was some kind of dating ritual. But I knew she wanted to talk seriously. She probably wanted to know what I'd found out about the book. Sucking in a deep